Welcome back to Future Considerations Podcast, courtesy of the Ice Garden. We have a whole lot to get to here, episode 5. A lot has happened in less than a month, which is usually the case in women's hockey. And we're going to try and touch on everything and not make it an Avengers Endgame level type episode. We're going to try and keep it under 3 hours, perhaps under 2 hours. But my name is Dan, and I'm really excited to talk about a lot of this stuff. And I'm sure my co-hosts have opinions on these topics as well.
Hi, it's Eleni. Sorry if you hear my dog yell at me at any point during this broadcast. I promise you he's fine. He just has a lot of feelings about women's hockey, I guess. We're really excited to be back. We took a little bit of an extended break for me to move, which I appreciate everyone's patience with. And I guess we're as ready as we're ever going to be to go over all the shenanigans of the end of the season and the beginning of the offseason.
All the shenanigans, right? Yeah. As always, this is Mike. I'm somewhat relieved because I needed the season to end so I could try to sleep a little bit more. I will very soon have my public sheet of stats up for media and fans, players, everybody, and that'll end up on their hockey account. So that's a fun little stats update. And yeah, things happen. That's the way it is with the show. You know, we're not weekly, and so we record when we can. And the playoffs weren't even started the last time we recorded. So a lot of crap has happened, to say the least. So we have an Isabel Cup champion. We have a certain meeting to discuss. We have so many things. A new head of the PA. I don't know. Where are we starting? Let's start with the hockey, right? So, Dan, who won the Isabel Cup, Dan? Do you know?
I believe it was the Boston Pride, who I'd like to point out, I predicted that they were going to be in the final. You know, neither one of you two, you know, you both just said the Connecticut Whale and you didn't say who they were going to be playing. So I did pick the Pride. I picked them to lose against Minnesota, which obviously didn't happen. But Boston is the champions again. I feel like they gave us the old rope-a-dope during the season, kind of just, you know, found their way, did their thing. And then when the time came for, like, when the games really mattered, they just were able to flick that switch. And they kind of romped the first two games. And then that last game was probably the best game out of all the playoff games.
I think
we can maybe all agree on that, that it was, I would say that game and the Connecticut Minnesota game was a pretty good game.
Yeah. That was the one I was going to mention. The only one I think that's in the same league, that whale Whitecaps game was great. Minnesota really played a great game and both teams played to their strengths. So that game was super entertaining, but, yeah, like you said, Boston, you know, kind of rope-a-doping, but I think it was more a case of a veteran team showing up in the playoffs and the Whale hitting a couple of crossbars and a one-game sample size because we have one-game playoff series. And it just so happened that that night was Boston's night, and then the Pride all let us know that everyone wanted them to lose. But it was still a great game. It was a great end of the season, a very worthy champion Pride team. So, I mean, it's crazy looking at that team finish, what, 10-5-5. I think that, like, to give you an idea of the Pride's regular season, like, the Riveters scored more goals than the Pride in the regular season, which is one of those stats that hurts my brain. Yeah. The Pride had 4 more goals than the Buttes in the regular season. So I don't know how that's possible, but it is. So the Pride win, the Whale, who a lot of folks, myself included, picked to win and kind of pulling to win the first cup, didn't win. But we have our champion. Pride go back-to-back, or as Paul Mara might want to argue, technically maybe a three-peat. I don't think.
I would also argue a three-peat, mostly because I think it's hilarious. and also because I told Braddy that if they won it, I would edit the Wikipedia page for three-peat and put the Pride in. And then they did, and I did. I don't know if it's still there. I haven't looked. But anyway, I don't know what to say about the Pride. It's interesting because I guess I want to talk about Katie Burt I don't know why I said it like that. I think it's just hard to pick something, and I picked her. So, Katie, if you're listening to this, that's all it was. I think that there were a lot of people, and like I was there, so I wasn't really like on Twitter as much, but I think a lot of people felt like the whale were getting really unlucky and like hitting a lot of posts. And I do think they were hitting a lot of posts. I don't know that it's fair to them or to the Pride to put it down to luck. I think that sometimes when a goalie is really hot and everyone knows and has seen them play really hot, and like through pretty much the end of the season, she was like, she had like literally an insane save percentage going into that game. And they all
953 or 958, I forget.
That's like not normal. That's not normal.
It's not a mortal being safe.
Even if you think it's not in your head, it is in your head. And she's not very big. She's like my height. And she just made herself look massive. She made them take suboptimal shots the way that... Sorry. She made them take suboptimal shots the way that she was closing down angles. And then, like, once you get through 20 minutes of that, it's so hard as the other team to come back and be like, no, like, we can still beat her. We can still beat them. We can still find somewhere. And then on top of that, the Pride's power play is starting to score. And every single one of their lines is ready to kill someone. Like, I think that it was, I don't feel good putting it down to luck, because I think that it was just, it's one of those games where like, if it was a series, I would buy that maybe things would have been different, but for a one-off game, like that's the kind of performance that it takes. It's just, you just have to, it has to be everything on the line. And that's what they did.
Can't disagree, Eleni, especially, what is it? Katie Bird had 32 saves in that game. And you know,
they had that extended, the boarding penalty. They killed a 5-minute penalty. That's not luck. It's just not. It's wanting it. I don't know. I'm not saying the whale didn't want it, but like the Pride were ready to die out there. They really like, I saw girls block shots with parts of their body that like during the regular season, you probably wouldn't make that decision. And that's what it took that night.
And maybe, I mean, going into it, one of the big things, like both teams, crazy scoring depth, right? Great talent on the blue line, but one team had a clear edge in net. That was Boston.
Yeah.
Like they lined, those two teams are a great matchup for each other, but you have to give the edge to Boston, not only in depth, but in who's the best starter. And, you know, Abby Ives, honestly, I thought she had a great game. She looked better in the playoffs than she did in the regular season to me. But, I mean, Katie Burt was a better starting goalie. And in a one game showdown, she was the better goalie. And like you said, it's, I mean, I look at that for Whale fans and I say, you know, hey, this is what happens when you have a one game playoff and all that. Like Marchment looked like Marchment. The Whale looked like the Whale for most of the game. Just Boston found its way in. So there we go.
I think if you're a Whale fan, it really hurts, because I mean, it was what, 13 minutes left in that game, 14 minutes. And it was, you were winning. It was your game. It was 2-1. Right. And Boston has a little spurt where they score really two quick ones, and the whole game flips. You know, the game was there. It was in their hands. And Eleni, I know you were there, and Mike and I, we saw it in Coach Orr and the players when they came and spoke to us via Zoom. That one really hurts. And but that's hockey, though, right? Like that's. The game was pretty even throughout, but Boston had a little spurt there that they kind of wrestled the momentum away. And you know, we could talk about the pipes, the goalposts. That was a thing that they mentioned. I think it was Marchman mentioned in the post game.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, we heard the same thing the day before from Minnesota saying, you know, if only we, they hit a post in the first period when it was nothing. That was a 0-0 game going into the second period. And then things kind of took off from there. And they hit another post where I think it was Thunstrom from a sharp angle thought that she got it under the bar.
Oh, yeah. She even raised her hands on that one, yeah.
Right. And you know, I'm pretty sure if you ask her today, she still thinks that it went in, and there's no conclusive angle that it didn't go in. But that's hockey, right? That's the way that the games go. And again, in a one game off set off setting, that's the way it goes. And you have to show up and, you know, bucket hats off to Boston. They showed up, and my favorite part was Amanda Boulier sitting down and saying, "Do I have to take my bucket hat off?" And we're all like, "No, like, you don't have to take any. You're a champion. You can do whatever you want." Like, so, you know, kudos to Boston, and they really, you know, turned it on. They smoked Buffalo, and then they smoked Toronto, and there was a good, like I said, it was a good final game. I thought it was, I'm glad we didn't get a 6-1 final game, and we got a game that was at least kept everybody's interest throughout the whole game.
Absolutely. Overall, it was a pretty great playoffs. I mean, I know the Riveters were really frustrated with their performance. I know Buffalo was frustrated for their performance. We already talked about how great the semis was. Were there any surprises you guys had? I think the one for me, the biggest surprise was, I really felt like the Riveters had a lot of momentum heading into the playoffs, and you know, they performed well against Minnesota. And then in that quarterfinal, they just, you know, they were flat. Minnesota just looked like a league's better team. And, you know, it's easy to say, well, Lev showed up like the Undertaker, you know, as Dan hinted in our last show, she rose out of the mist and out of a coffin like Dracula. But, you know, that obviously has to play some effect on the Riveters being like, oh, great, we're shooting against Lev. But at the end of the day, all the skaters, like the Rivs were just in such a bad way. I think I'm one of those people, we have so few stats to use in the world of women's hockey, and I hate plus minus as a stat. I make that known all the time. But one interesting little tidbit is a plus 13 in the regular season for Madison Packer. In the regular season, in that playoff game, she was a minus 4 against Minnesota. Like, that's your best player, and she's a minus 4. It kind of tells the story of what happened in that game. Like, the Riveters just didn't have it. They knew what the game plan was for Minnesota, and they couldn't stop them.
I think, to be fair to Madison, after the first period, nobody else played. So you kind of have to be a minus 4 if the coach benches everybody else. You don't really have
to. And if you're on the ice,
for every single goal, nobody else is playing. And I think that that's probably a lot of what happened. I think all season, to me, it was very clear that what was going on with the Rivs was a mental thing and not a talent thing, not a strategy thing necessarily. Although we talked about maybe certain players should play more. I still think that that held true in the final. I don't think it would have made a difference because mentally they just weren't, I don't know. I think that what I saw personally when I was there, the teams other than Buffalo, I will say both the Six and the Riveters had just a different attitude going in than the teams that won those games. I think that especially the Six felt very confident going into that game. I don't know if the Rivs really necessarily felt confident or if they were just like hyping themselves up to be that way, but it was definitely like a different, they were rowdy. It wasn't as like, I mean, it's just a very different way to approach the mental side of the game. And it either works or it doesn't. And when it works, like, I'm so sorry.
Willie has thoughts Willie that we need to hear.
I know you have a lot of feelings about this. I think that it's not like the Pride weren't rowdy, you know? I definitely would describe them that way, but they also were very focused. And I think that a lack of focus early on in a game against a team that, like, Minnesota was the worst possible team for them to play at that time, right? Because Minnesota is all focus all the time. Even sometimes when it's like, maybe you should try something new. Let's have fun with it. Like, they will be laser focused the whole game, especially having Lev in front of them. It was totally just an attitude mismatch. And I think the Six game was like that too for them. They got caught super flat footed because they felt like they were coming in on top. And when it's a one game playoff, you I think maybe have to have a slightly different approach to it, which is like, we could lose this game. We might lose it. And whether or not we do is entirely in our control versus coming in like, we probably should win this game. I feel like probably we should win this game. Like, yeah, but it's one game. All it takes is one person having the game of their lives, and that's the game.
I feel like I agree with everything you said, and you were there, and from here, it didn't seem like it was a business trip for them. It's something I kind of have tiptoed around a little bit, but like, and if I'm off base, somebody please, you know, message me, tweet at me, let me know. You know, they're taking pictures at bars and night before a playoff game, and you know, and then they didn't show up that game. Other teams went down there, and it's Tampa, right? It's sun, it's fun. They kind of just went down there and just kind of did their thing, and you know, the way that it played out, they really didn't show up. I mean, they showed up, but they really didn't. I don't think they had a chance in that game from the beginning. Like, they just kind of looked defeated the way they played, and the bench gets shortened. You're running the same players over and over again. They looked exhausted by the end of the game, and Minnesota ran four lines and three pairs, and they came out on top. The thing that shocked me the most, I think, though, was that Buffalo, you know, they lost 6-0. I thought the game was closer than that. It was you know, getting caught with a couple of spurts of Boston's dominance, and Buffalo was never really able to recover, especially when I think they called timeout after one of the goals, and then Boston scored, and it's not supposed to work out, right? It's not supposed to work out that way. It's supposed to work out the other way, where you score the goal, and that really just, I think that crushed their spirit, and you know, it was disappointing that that their season just ended that way. Like, they're a better team than that. They showed us that, you know, especially at the end of the season. They could play with anybody, but it was just in that kind of setting, a one game thing. I was just shocked that it ended that way for them. But I don't think that's the end of them. I think that's going to be good fuel for them going into the off season. And I expect that a large majority of that group will probably be back.
Yeah, it was interesting to me. It was something that kind of wrapping up some of what we talked about for the playoffs. In all the games for Boston, we saw them do that thing where they scored in bunches in a game. Like, yeah, they found a way to seize momentum and score a couple quick goals in all three games. And that was something they didn't do all regular season long. And it was the weirdest thing watching a team that was that good, that much talent, that much depth. And they never really did that. But in the playoffs, they did that. They built a little bit of momentum. They lit the lamp. And then all of a sudden, it was go. It was, they're scoring the pucks in the opposition zone. And the Boston Pride. They're the Boston Pride that nearly went undefeated a couple of years ago. That's the team that we saw. And what can you say? That then they showed up at the right time. Great leadership, great coaching, great group, worthy champion. So congrats to the Pride. Now we move on to some playoff aftermath. We should start, I think, you know, Dan, you just mentioned about Buttes and a lot of that team returning. We did hear that MJP has decided to hang up her skates. So you know, speaking as a member of the media who's gotten to watch MJP's pro career, unbelievable player. I don't think anyone ever really gave her, especially like mainstream media should have been paying a lot of attention to how special this player was. And I don't think she ever got the credit she deserved as someone who should be in the conversation for best defender of the year. Like, a lot more to playing defense than picking up points and secondary assists. And a player like her is going to be missed in a big way, not just for her impact on the ice, but a leader and someone who leads by example. Another player who hung up her skates is Allie Morse, you know, a friend of the podcast, a very popular player, a great person. So same goes for MJP, two great people, two great players who are moving on. So we wish them nothing but the best.
Yeah, and just to echo everything that Mike said, MJP, I'm constantly amazed at her prowess on the ice, especially at the size that she is. Her impact is definitely going to be missed on and off the ice in Buffalo. And for Allie is just a great person. You mentioned a friend of the podcast and hopefully future guest on the podcast. I'm sure that will happen in the off season before we get to next season.
I hadn't really thought about whether or not MJ was going to be done until the game ended. And I saw her go to the ice immediately. And I was like, oh man, oh, I'm not having a good time. Like I was like, fine. Like I was sad for them. It sucks. But that was the moment where I was like, oh fuck, this sucks. And I mean, just seeing, you know, Wenskowski was her roommate, I think, in college.
Yeah.
And seeing them after the game, you know, I think it just speaks volumes to what kind of person MJ is and how much she was just universally respected and loved in the league. The league will miss her a lot. I think we're going to have a lot of those moments over the next couple months. And I think the best thing to do to me is to think about like what, you know, these people accomplished in their careers. It's really hard to think about too much otherwise, but I think, you know, MJ and Ali at the very least are two people who will have lasting impacts on the sport, whether it's this league or in the future, if there's other things. These are people that are builders. So I don't know if MJ is going to be up for any big awards, assuming those actually happen. But I would like to give her a special award for being the only thing that weekend that made me cry. So
there you go. The tearjerker award, MJP. I mean, yeah. it's a you good segue. She'll actually
feel bad that she made me cry, but it's a nice thing, I promise.
It's a pretty good segue, so we'll jump to it. When are awards coming? Our awards coming. In past years, you know, obviously Lake Placid was a little goofy. Dan and I have talked a lot about awards last year. Dan's already shaking his head about awards given out after the Lake Placid season. He didn't like that players got awards, but I had to try and make it's a whole thing, folks. Long story short, media has been involved with the league's award voting every year. And for full disclosure and transparency, behind the scenes, I've helped organize media voting. Just by making sure markets are represented, making sure folks are on the front lines covering the league have a say, all that stuff. I've been quietly and not so quietly campaigning for more awards, things like Coach of the Year, Defensive Forward, things like this. Reach out to the league a couple times about clarity, when awards are coming, because it means a lot, not just to fans, not just to players, of course, and coaches, but also to media, who, for a lot of us, this is a big deal, having our vote count for something. And we heard they weren't going to happen until after playoffs, which was a little different. And playoffs have been over for a bit now, and we still haven't heard anything. So right now we know about as much as you. I really hope that awards are not something that's overlooked, but I also know there's a lot of changes going on behind the scenes at the league, and I don't know how much of a priority this is, but it should be treated as a pretty important thing, because if we get to the summer and they haven't figured this out, it's going to look pretty goofy. It already looks a little goofy that it hasn't been addressed yet, in my opinion, but there you go.
It feels really goofy that it's not been addressed yet.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I think it's tough because I know they run a skeleton crew, but they don't need to. Like, they could have more people. I don't know. It's just an option. I feel like when they decide to staff a skeleton crew, the people who are working get kind of put on the spot for stuff that's like really an organizational issue. Like, really, those people probably should have help.
What are you talking about, Eleni? When has that ever happened with the league? Name one time.
People definitely don't individually take the fall for systemic failures ever anywhere in the world. I think I should obviously not be allowed to vote, but I think that this would be a really interesting and exciting award season, and especially a season where seriously
really wants to vote.
A season,
we'll see what I can do.
You can vote. Especially a season where there's probably going to be players who are done after this, like, and some of those players are going to be up for awards. Like, it would really be nice to be able to like honor them in a way that feels like planned and put together and like gives them the respect that they deserve. And I'm worried that we're not going to get that. But I would love to be wrong. One of my favorite things ever to do is to say, this would be really bad if it happened, and then be like, psych, it was actually much better than I thought it was going to be. So I would love for this to be one of those situations. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Here's what's going to happen. It's, if it doesn't happen, if nobody like picks up the ball on this in the next, you know, week at most, week, 7 days, like, we just have to do it ourselves. That's what it's basically going to come down to. Like,
no.
You don't think so?
No, I'm just opting out of it.
No, Michelle's saying, as the leader of TIC, that she doesn't want to organize another thing.
Exactly. Fair.
Because otherwise it's not going to get done. That's just like, somebody said, I don't remember which one of you two said, you know, obviously it's not on the list of things for them to do. It's not even close, because it would have been done already. It takes like 5 seconds to set up a voting poll. You know, you email 20 people, 30 people, and that's it. And, you know, you give them a week or a couple of days.
Grab last year's mailing lists. Take a quick look. Did other folks cover the sport?
Right.
I mean, you deserve. Make sure there's a balance of your markets. Send out the emails. Set up a Google form. I've done it 5 times, I think.
It's not like,
doesn't take that long.
It's not like rocket science here. We're not trying to like reinvent things and be different. Like, let's just, you know, it means something to the players when they go into the off season. It's like, hey, like, you know, I'm looking for a new deal, and you know, I finished, you know, second in defender of the year voting, or second in newcomer of the year, or whatever we're going to call it this year. Like, I think it does mean something. And
means a lot, in my opinion. Yeah.
And that kind of leads into, as reported by Melissa Burgess, and there's possibly, probably not going to be a draft this year for collegiate players.
There should never be a draft in any sport. Yeah. All drafts are stupid. I think, I know that that's like a vastly unpopular opinion, and there are plenty of like valid arguments for why we do it, especially in the context of women's professional hockey in the US, where nobody is getting paid a living wage. It is a complete clown puppet show to do a draft ever. Nobody is ever going to get drafted to a team that they're not going to play to and then go play there. It's just not happening. You are drafting players who you either A, already know are going to play for you, B, reasonably believe are going to play for you, or C, you have no idea if they're going to play for you or not, and you just look like a clown. Who do you think drafted Sarah Nurse? Do you remember who drafted her?
Was it Boston?
It was Boston. The same year they drafted Anne-Renee Debiens. So I'm just saying, you know, I think
it was a different time, though.
Was it really? I mean, does it matter now?
The draft is always
the thing is, like, most irrelevant of these players are still not going to make a living wage. Some of them are, and that's great. The players who are going to make a living wage are not the ones getting drafted. The kids who are coming out of college are going to make not enough money for you to say, hey, Katrin Lonergan coming out of Clarkson from Massachusetts, come play in Detroit. Like, maybe she would do it, but is it worth, like, I don't know. I just think that it's silly. And also from a labor perspective, and this is coming from a very pro player, and I think that there are plenty of players who would disagree with me, but like speaking from an organizing and labor perspective, they are workers and they should be allowed to have control over the place that they work. 100%. Especially now when you're seeing such a vast difference in the kinds of workplaces that these teams are. Like, it's a very different place to play in Buffalo than it is to play in other places. And to take that choice out of anybody's hands, no matter how much money they're playing, is wrong. It would be like if you graduated from high school and they were like, you have been drafted to work at Home Depot for the next 5 years. And if you want to work somewhere else, you have to go to the Home Depot man and beg him very nicely to trade you to McDonald's where you can work for 5 years. That's bad shit. Why do we do that to people? I don't think it makes any sense.
But that's not really the case, though. I understand 100%, but I mean, as much as I'm not, I don't love the idea of doing things just for show. I think that's kind of what it really is. It's just a way to bring in, you know, random NHL player to announce your player gets drafted on Twitter. And then after 2 weeks, if you don't sign that player, then that's the end of it. Like, somebody else could go sign him. Now, if you're stupid enough, like I think the Riveters were, to try and sign a player that another team drafted before the 2 week period that, you know, before the unrestricted part of it goes, and you get fined for it, and then your GM kind of falls on the sword for somebody, you know, then that's kind of, you know, that's on you. Like, why didn't you just wait 2 weeks? I didn't get that part, but you know, it's all kind of for show and to kind of, hey, you know, we're welcoming you. We want to kind of lay out the roses and the red carpet for you and make you feel wanted. And then maybe it does sway you. And if it doesn't, then all things being equal. But if you look at last year's draft.
Which one? Don't forget we had an international draft.
Well, the international draft was complete BS because a team had already signed a player. And then they were like, oh, no, you can't sign those players. We have to have an international draft. Like, what's this?
And then Lolo Burnson's like, yeah, I just got drafted. Here's my custom paint job on my mask. This is a big surprise to me that I'm a Buffalo Butte. Yeah.
I guess my only argument with, like, there's two things about the fanfare. One is that we can do that for free agent signings if we want to. Every year in the NHL, there's a guy that signs with a team, and it's like a huge deal, and there's like a hype fan cam, and like there's a press conference. Like, we could do that. Like, if Ali Thunstrom this year was like, fuck it, I'm gonna go play in Boston, we absolutely could have that energy for it if we wanted to. They could have Taylor Hall do a press conference about her signing.
That's the craziest idea I've heard in a while.
What? He's saying it's crazy, I think.
The craziest thing that I heard.
Okay, she did go to BC, but that's fine. I know she wouldn't. Or, you know, so that's one thing, is that, like, I think we can find ways to hype it up without, like, resorting to the draft structure. And then my other thing is that, to me, the draft, and this is true in most women's sports, I think, that I've paid attention to, feels very much like a, look at us, we're a men's league, and, like, we do the same thing the boys do, so we're legitimate. And that's bullshit. It's stupid. It doesn't work the same way. It's a different sport. It's a different structure. We don't need to do everything the NHL is doing. It doesn't make sense for us. And it makes us look like we're, like, we want the boys to like us more than we want to do things that make sense for the players, which I think is dumb.
Different.
But if the players really want a draft, then they should have a draft. If that's, like, something they want, then that's fine. I just think there's a lot of good reasons not to have one. Now, I will say, to be candid, I don't think any of those reasons are the reasons why we're not doing it. I think it's probably just logistically impossible, and they don't want to do it. But there are good reasons not to do it, and we can pretend those are the reasons that they're not doing it. I mean, sure, why not? Maybe that's why.
I mean, it's funny because I, as someone who helped, like, create content for the league for a season, I know, like, the draft is there. One of the reasons the draft is there, both Dan and Lenny touch on this, is, like, it's a story, right? It's, oh, this team, you build up an off-season story, you keep people talking about the league. But I really side more with Eleni in terms of, like, what is the purpose of the draft? The biggest counterpoint I think is, like, you can make a special moment in a player's life by saying you got drafted to a pro team. But what does that mean when it's not a living wage? What does that mean when it's just their perception of what it would mean if they were drafted into the NHL, which is what they all probably dreamed about growing up. It's like, so it means something, right? There's something there, but the draft won't mean anything until there's more structure. There's more, like, there's more to the league than just, oh, I got drafted to this team. Are you going to sign there? I have to have another job. I'm staying in Minnesota. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's, that's why the international draft, like, I looked at it right away. I'm like, this is just publicity. It's just a story to build hype. And, like, you know, it's, to me, it's more like they should hype up more things like training camps. Like, training camp invites, build content around that, build buzz around that. Like, it's not that hard to me.
For the summer.
Yeah, like, guess who's at a free agent camp? Player X from Sweden, player Y from... This, she had an unbelievable year in NCAA Division III. Like,
player X from the Riveters. You don't need to do that. Whale camp. That should have been a whole big thing. The second Moore showed up in Connecticut, there should have been like, there should have been this year in the WNBA offseason when there was like, we were trying to figure out whether or not, I think it was Stewie was going to re-sign in Seattle, and it was like Stewie watch. There should have been Moose watch. And I will never forgive anybody for not making it a big enough deal. Like, there, we should have had TSN there. ESPN should have had like a Moose watch calendar, and we didn't get any of that shit because no one was like, there were like three of us that were like, hey, my buddy's at whale training camp and says that Rebecca Morse is here. Do we have like feelings about that? And everyone was like, nah, I'm sure it's fine. And then it was
Isabel Cup champion Rebecca Morse. Yeah, she's probably just trying to get some extra ice time.
She's just getting some reps. She drove to Connecticut for fun to get some reps.
Turns out not the case. Anyway, I think we covered that one pretty good.
Wait, I want to say something.
Oh, God.
Like, okay, so everything you guys are saying is totally valid, but I think we're ignoring the elephant in the room, the open secret here, that these are not real drafts. Players are only being drafted by teams that they've already talked to and already expressed interest in. Like, at least the most recent ones, you know, the Sarah Nurse one was an anomaly in a different time when the league was doing that purely for the publicity of drafting Sarah Nurse and ARD and God knows who else got drafted that year that never went on to play in the league or even was even considering playing in the league. Players aren't surprised by who they're being drafted by unless they're in the position where they can talk to multiple teams.
No, because Tatum Skaggs got drafted by the Six and she said she didn't even know the league existed. So I don't know if that's
okay, but that's theory. Then that's a Six problem. That's a new team to the draft problem. That's a Digit Murphy problem. That's a Toronto Six. Almost every other player that's being drafted here knows they're being like at least considered.
But there were some that were like, they told me at least, like, yeah, I talked to the Riveters, I talked to Connecticut, I talked to Buffalo, I talked to Boston. Like, that's, you know, that's the East Coast basically, right? So you're looking at players that are East Coast based. So there is a little, and that's how not in, you know, in the NHL or other pro sports, like when they have drafts, they're allowed to talk to the college kids, but they don't, you know, say like, we're not going to take you and move you halfway across the country. Like Minnesota's not going to take an East Coast kid. Like that's just not going to happen. Like,
yeah. Like it's all, I think the open secret and here is that like, it's a marketing exercise. And I think if it's treated as such for the players, so that way they know what's happening and we don't have a Tatum Skaggs or we don't have a new GM/president/front office who has no fucking clue what they're doing. Yeah. It's not a bad marketing exercise for the league to be a running a full league event in the off season and B, like getting the hype of it because people know what a draft is. And like, as much as we don't want it to be different, I mean, as much as we don't want to be like the men's programs, like, I don't know. I don't see the draft as a bad reason or as a bad example of that. Like
I heard, Toronto was mad, really mad that Buffalo took somebody that they wanted in the regular draft. And that might be why they ended up taking somebody that they don't know anything about. Like, because I know Nate talked to these players and was like, hey, look, you know, there's a strong possibility that I'm going to take you. Yeah. Is this something you're interested in? Yes, no, maybe. And they signed, I think, 5 out of the 8 picks they had. So that's good, pretty good odds. And they were pretty, I think, pretty serviceable players.
Maybe we keep the draft around just because Nate's still around. I mean,
but he'll do fine.
Someone who uses the draft to actually build a team. Yeah.
He'll be fine without that, where he'll be able to, you know, here
he would, but yeah.
He has his free agent camp scheduled already. Like, no other team, I don't think, is that far ahead.
I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think Nate knows what he's doing. I'm glad you chimed in, though, Michelle, because it is interesting because a lot of people have different feelings about the draft. Like, I was reading Eleni's tweets today about, like, you know, what do drafts mean to players? Like, it's not, I mean, I know players have an emotional, like, response and connection to being drafted. It carries weight. It means something. But there's also the whole thing of, like, it's a weird thing to be like, yes, we have this player's rights. What?
Like, no, that's definitely weird. And like,
it's sketchy. It's a little shitty. Yeah. And like, I would like, it would be really nice for this league to be like, you know what? Let's not have that weird crap.
I think the other thing that I worry about in the way that the landscape is and has been is that if we if we continue to do the draft and everybody knows that it's not a real draft, like, people don't treat that kindly. There's no like, well, I think it's nice that they're getting drafted. Like, I there are some people who think it's nice that they're getting drafted, but there are a whole lot of fucking people who are like, this just makes them look like clowns. Like, this just makes them look like they're lying to all of us and they're pretending that this is something that it isn't. Like, unfortunately, the way that the landscape is right now, you're not going to get a favorable reading of anything you do. You either need to knock it out of the park or just don't bother doing it. And if that's the decision, if they're like, look, there's no way we're going to be able to pull this off in a way that's satisfying, then fine, don't do it. That's fine. But you better reallocate that energy somewhere and knock something out of the park, because right now we don't have awards. We don't have a draft. We don't know anything about the two upcoming supposed expansion franchises.
We don't have a commissioner.
We don't have a commissioner. I forgot about that.
You know what we do have? You know what we do have? Or had? Oh, yeah. We had a game in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, where the... I'm going to do that every time.
I didn't know until the second day, but there were actually two games. They didn't really kind of...
Yeah, what's up with that?
They didn't... And it was, you know, I was told it was agreed upon before they had gotten there. And it was like, oh, you know, like, they actually had something planned out and organized for once. And they were like, yeah, it was actually really nice. Like, we knew kind of going into it. And they played, was the first game was Saturday afternoon, right before the Tulsa Oilers ECHL game. And the Whitecaps won 5-2. And then the next day, the Whitecaps won, I think it was 4-2, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it was, by all accounts, it was really great and fun. And the players that did show, Buffalo had, I think, 19 out of 24 players show up, and Minnesota had 12. And they brought some imports kind of along with them to help out. And they all had a blast. They said the crowd was great, very enthusiastic. They got to meet a lot of fans afterwards. And actually, I talked to defender Emma Keenan on the Buttes. I actually spoke to her today for an interview for the Ice Garden. Shameless plug. But she mentioned, we talked about Oklahoma, and she said it was really nice to, after the game, they did like autograph signings and stuff like that, and they got to really connect with fans, which is something that players haven't been able to do for the last 2 years, which is kind of something that's been a part of this league from the beginning. And they really enjoyed that. And they said that they would definitely be, or she said they would definitely be looking forward to doing something like that again in the future. And it exceeded their expectations.
I think it rocks. I thought it was cool. I thought it was especially cool for two teams who I think in some ways probably really felt like they weren't done, you know, to get to not be done. And I think it was really cool to have Erica there. It was really cool to see how many people showed up. Like, so many people were there. And it's like not even anywhere near a PHF market. It's not even like you were like, oh, let's try Bridgeport, which is like not really the whale market, but like close enough. And then a couple thousand people show up and you're like, all right, that makes sense. This is, there's like, what's the closest team? Minnesota, I guess.
Yeah, it's the Heartland.
Emma said a fan told her, and she was great. Again, shameless plug. She was a really fun interview, and I didn't know her before today, really. But she said some fan mentioned that they had drove 5 hours to see them, and that was like something that kind of like really stuck with her, because they did a little like skate with youth. I guess it's youth junior Oilers or something out there before the game or after the game they played on Sunday, and. They really got to meet a lot of different people who came from a lot of different places to see them play, that they didn't know, you know, that those people knew they existed, to be honest. So that I think it kind of opened their eyes to how much of an impact they kind of are having, whether or not they see it firsthand or not.
I mean, it's one of those things where people are like, isn't this weird? This happened right after the playoffs. But to me, it was just like, all right, I'm not going to turn down more hockey. And it kind of worked out. Like you said, it's these teams who maybe might have had a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth after the playoffs, they get like, you know, the touchy feely part of me is like, you know what? They get a couple more games with their teammates, people they've been with all year. that's awesome. You know, one more, I know for like the Buttes and stuff, like after their disappointment in the quarterfinals, I know they did whatever they could to have a good time in Tampa and stuff like that. And it's, you know, like it's this weird silver lining over there. It's like, oh, you know, you just got eliminated, but you know what? You're in Tampa for the weekend, you know, go hit the pool, relax, enjoy it. Which is nice. Yeah, not a bad place.
A bunch of them like really made the best of it. They weren't just in Tampa. I think some of them went to St. Pete. Some of them went to Miami. Awesome,
yeah.
They were definitely enjoying themselves, and it was very soothing to me to go at somewhere and see them like chilling after that game. Cause
it felt like a celebration to me.
And yeah. Like, I mean, they were having a good time. I'm sure they were bummed.
Wonderful thing.
Yeah. But they were, I mean, if the drinks had not been so expensive, I think everyone would have gotten around, but they were chilling, and I'm happy for them that they got to cap their season off on what probably felt like a much more positive note. Also, we got to see Katie Flagg play, which I think is awesome. Yep. I know that Nate's approach with her and Rhea's approach with her has been sort of like, we're going to let her develop and not like throw her to the wolves. And she played really well. It was really nice to watch her get to play. And like, I'm sure that it's bodes well for her future with the team to see that she's, you know, they clearly feel like they have something with her, and it's important to them to do it right. And I think that's really cool. It's not necessarily something we've seen like a long-term plan like that in the league before. So it's just cool to see.
Yeah. Perfect opportunity to get Flag some experience against players in the league in a big, you know, unique setting and all that. It was a perfect example. Moving on now to some other major news, because holy crap, do we have a lot of major news to cover. We have a new head of the PA. It's official. Following, you know, this is PA head number 4. We had Erica Lawler. We had Anya Packer. We had Alex Sinatra. And now we have Nicole Carrero. Carrero. I'm not Italian. I'm sorry. It's a big deal. We'd heard that this was probably happening. There was hints about it. This is a really interesting fit to me, because this is someone who is a lawyer, but also has a really strong connection to the hockey world. She was like a truly elite collegiate player at Harvard. She holds a couple of records that are still standing, including goals in a season. She had like 59 goals in 36 games one year, which leads me to believe she might have been pretty good at hockey. You know, it seems reasonable to assume that's pretty good. But it's a relief that it's finally here. But like was mentioned a little bit ago, still need a commissioner. So there's still a couple things on the checklist. But Eleni, Dan, thoughts on the new head of the PA? Is it officially the PA of the PHF? Because we can't say PHF PA because it's too close to PWHPA.
Oh, can we not do that? I don't know.
Is that the reason why? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm sure.
I say PHF.
Legally, we could say it if we wanted to, I think. But I don't know. I think it's exciting. It's cool. I think it's good. I think that there's a very clear connection to some investors in the league that makes it seem a little bit like, where did you find this girl? Oh, it's a coincidence. That's nice. And it might be a coincidence. It might be totally unrelated, but considering the optics of many other things currently happening, I think that it's fair that there have been some eyebrows waggling. I think that she, you know, everything that I've heard about her from players, she's lovely. They're very excited to have her. They feel really good about her. She's been a lawyer for a long time. She's got, she's, you know, registered to practice law in both Canada and the US, which is really cool. Doesn't necessarily practice like sports law, or, you know, she's a litigator, but I mean, nobody wants to catch a litigator in a courtroom, you know, like you don't want to sit across from someone who's, that's their job. So I think that,
what's,
you know,
a litigator?
She's in court. She's not like I draft contracts all day. And she, I think her job is more like going to court, lawsuits versus contracts.
One of her focuses is sports injuries. So I was like, oh, that's a little interesting wrinkle that she has like sports injuries and things like that. So, I mean, it makes sense.
She's going to know a lot about insurance. Yeah. She's going to know a lot about workers' comp. She's going to know a lot about sports injuries. And I think that that's really important leading into a season where supposedly they're going to be having more options in terms of health benefits and insurance. It's really will help them to have someone in the room who knows what the hell is going on. Enough to call, you know, if needed, call someone out and be like, I actually know that that doesn't cover what you know, have just said. And I think just in general, she's a good blend of someone who understands the culture enough to hopefully mesh well with the players, and also has enough business and legal experience to be formidable when she needs to be. So also she's like a crazy good CrossFitter.
Yeah.
she's like a really highly ranked CrossFitter. I'm not really sure. I was going to say talented. I don't know I don't know how to phrase. I don't really know anything about CrossFit. But I have heard that she also excels in that area of her life, which is cool.
Sounds like she passed the lawyering's test from you, and she passed the stats and math part of the equation from Mike. I don't know much about math or any lawyerings really, but
various law and lawyerings, bird law.
I'm on board. If you guys think it's cool, I'm cool with. I don't know, you know, that's not really my field of expertise. From everybody I've talked to within the Players Association of the PHF, if that's what we're calling it, they all
Federation of Players of the Federation, the premier hockey federation of players, the
Galactic Alliance of PHF players.
They all seem to like it. Everybody's happy right now, and you know, I have a pretty good feeling it'll work out. Hopefully, you know, we make it past the first month. That's the first hurdle, and then from there,
someone had to mention it, Dan. It was going to be you.
I'm you know, it seems like a great move. You guys gave like I said, great endorsements, and hopefully it's you know, works out exactly the way everybody wants it to work out.
I mean, I think I speak for all of us when we're not necessarily pro PHF, we're all pro player, right? And the head of the PA needs to be the player's greatest advocate. If Nicole can do that, then she's the right hire. It's a big job. It's a really big job heading into a season where the salary cap's up, where there's all this nonsense and chaos surrounding the league. And they need someone who, you know, knows her shit, will get the job done, and will look out for the player's best interests. When, you know, in the past, it's not a secret that the head of the PA and the league and the ownership group, like, they've had to have a close relationship just because that's the nature of things, right? That's how things have had to work. We're slowly getting closer to a place where the players can really be separate and have someone who can advocate for them against the league when the league isn't doing right by the players. And, you know, if the PHF has a direct competition with this new league that we know is coming, the things that players get is going to be a huge influence in where players land. So the head of the PA is the most, couldn't be a more important piece of the puzzle for either of these leagues, which brings us to, oh yeah, there was a meeting, which I actually didn't even include in the show notes before. And I remembered it when we started the show. So Haley Salvian and others have reported the NHL, the PWHPA, and the PHF all sat down in a room. I assume there was a large table, mahogany, I'm guessing, likely varnished. And things went the way they went, which was honestly was not a surprise to me. I don't think it was a surprise to anyone necessarily, wherein the PWHPA came away from it saying, yeah, we're done. We're not going to collaborate. We're not going to communicate with the PHF moving forward. And that is what it is. So I think there were some people holding out hope that maybe something would come of this. I don't know who those people are. from someone who's been pretty close to this since I've started covering the women's game, I'm like, oh, yeah, this... Yeah, I could have told you how things were going to end up.
But I feel anyway, like I'm telling people that Santa isn't real when I have this conversation. But this was never going to go any other way. And anyone who's really seriously wasn't. Trying to tell you that there was a serious conversation where people really sat down and listened and like decisions were made that day or following that day is absolutely full of shit. There is absolutely no chance on planet Earth. And it was never going to be like, oh, you guys have insurance now. Well, maybe we'll consider it. They don't care. It doesn't matter. It was never going to matter. And that's why that was like, you know, not, it's not like when for the game happened, they put out a list of specific demands that they needed. And it's because that's not what they were doing. It was never a labor movement in the sense that like workers strike from an employer that they intend to come back to when their needs are met. That's not what the situation was. It was not a strike. It was people saying, no, we're done with this. We're walking out. We're not walking out like and giving you an option to fix it. We just are sick of it. We're gonna done. Do our own thing.
We're done.
And it's been years and it's time for them to do it. It's time to put your money where your mouth is. Like at this point, just do it. Enough. Everybody stop talking about trying to fix it. It doesn't need to be fixed. Just let them do it and we'll see what it is. And whatever it is, it'll be, and it'll have good things and bad things. And we'll just let it be what it is and stop. Please stop trying to make it sound like there was some Kim Kardashian level meltdown in that boardroom, because I promise you they walked in and they ate some stale bagels and they said, are you feeling any better about this than you did the last 800 times we tried to have this conversation? No. And the NHL said, it would be really nice if you guys would play nice.
Pretty please.
It would really help us. Optics wise, it would really help us because we're probably heading into another lockout. So if we could lean on you a little bit, that would be really nice if you would do this one thing.
Big win for the NHL if they came out of that meeting.
Both of them said, these bagels are stale, sir.
Gary Bettman.
And then they left. And that's
it. I'm already in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Now I'll be in the Women's Hockey Hall of Fame. Look at me. Right? Yeah. That's the, I'm sure
that was my appetite. Jesus.
But, no, I'm not surprised. I don't know, Dan, you were shaking your head while I was saying what I said. Were you surprised, Dan, that this was the result?
I was not surprised, and I'm not going to leave you guys or anybody else's time by riffing about it. I've said multiple times, wake me up when something substantial happens, and I'm still asleep. Let's move on to something more, I don't know, less crazy. Is there anything else?
That's crazy. I got news for you. We have one big thing left to talk about, it's a thing. So,
and that's crazy too, I guess, huh?
Well, you broke the story, Dan. So why don't you lead us into it? Because this you caused all these problems, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I probably did. I guess I probably caused a lot of angst amongst a lot of people. I'm
hope sure you're proud of yourself.
Don't take that from him. You just rolled right over and took that from him. Unbelievable.
I don't know. I wasn't trying to ruin anybody's day or an entire fan base's
you
day.
Did your job, bro. You if people job, are mad at you for doing your job, that is a them problem.
It's like, you know, sometimes you want to be the person that reports things first, but you want to make sure you get it right and get it accurate.
Yeah.
But it stinks when it's like you want to kind of be proud of your work, but you also understand when people are understandably upset about, you know, whatever that message is that you're getting across.
You should be proud of breaking the story. It just sucks that it's not a fun, nice story. It's
anybody story who's mad at you for breaking that story is out of their mind.
No, I don't
it would be one thing if you broke it and it wasn't true. Like if you wrote it and you were like, and they were like, oh, actually not what happened. I would understand.
Nothing has been announced yet, right? For those who have been under a rock and haven't been paying attention, or you don't have social media and you follow the PHF and you're listening to this podcast, first of all, thank you. We appreciate you. We don't know how you found us. Maybe you're the people that listen to us from Germany. Maybe not. Hello, Germany. Back on task. I reported that, and we posted on the Ice Garden that the Riveters are going to name Digit Murphy as the team president.
Who's that? You know,
Digit Murphy is a very polarizing, divisive name person for a lot of different reasons. But that's not official yet. So I still stand by it, and nothing has changed as far as I'm concerned, and as far as I've heard, that's still the plan. But there is a little bit of a chain reaction that has started to happen because this is coming, and you know, I heard it from, or I got alerted to it possibly happening from one source. Digit is currently the team president and director of player personnel at Toronto. And I heard that the, you know, it's basically the Boyntons moving her from Toronto to the Riveters before the sale is completed, with the Toronto Six and the new owners, and keeps Digit under their wing. By all accounts, they like her. They feel like she gets shit done. But I don't know. I don't think it's a great move. I don't know if it's ever going to become official. I think it would probably become official, but I can't see. I don't know how the season starts, and everything is, you know, and she's going to be there. I don't know. And I don't, other than, you know, a few interactions here and there, I don't know Digit personally. And as I said, there's kind of been a little bit of chain reaction of things that have also started to fall out now.
Anya did not renew her GM agreement. She tweeted about it.
Correct.
A lot of her staff have also stepped away. Her PR person, her stats person. There were definitely others, and I'm sure there will continue to be others. I think the Digit thing is particularly meaningful in a bad way right now, at a time when there is so much anti-trans legislation across the country. It's something that you would hope that a sports league that purports to be inclusive would take a really vocal stance on. I mean, we've seen in the WNBA and in the NWSL, the leagues and the teams raising awareness about these issues and standing against these, frankly archaic anti-trans laws. And that's, not only is that not happening, you're also, you know, a franchise that has had one of the most passionate fan bases since day one is being gifted a president that has never really addressed or taken responsibility for the anti-trans rhetoric that she has parroted in the past. I don't know whether or not she has a different opinion now. I don't know whether or not she has learned something. But the fact that we don't know that, and she's being moved to this team in this landscape especially, just tells a really, really bad story. And everybody who's mad about it is completely valid to be mad about it. And from a business perspective, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You've lost so many people that were well-loved by the fans, by the players, by the community, are all stepping away. You're losing some of the brightest minds in various facets of tracking stats and, you know, communications and marketing, because they have principles that they have to stand with. And I just can't see how it's going to go well for them if it does go through. Maybe something happens. I don't know. I don't think so. I think this is going to be the reality. And I think there's going to be probably players that don't come back. There's going to be a lot of musical chairs, I guess is how I would phrase it, over the next however many months before we get to do this again.
I don't want to mince words, so I'm going to be pretty direct here. Like, it's just so for folks who might not have the background, Digit Murphy was associated with something called the Women's Sports Policy Working Group, which has been accused very fairly of being a TERF group in terms of women's sports. TERF meaning trans exclusionary radical feminists. So trans women and girls don't have a place in sports and fair competition, which of course is the word inclusivity. This is the opposite of inclusivity, right? And Digit disassociated herself from that group. Toronto, you know, she moved from behind the bench. I actually spoke to her after some of these things happened in an article for the Ice Garden. You know, I asked her very straightforward, would she have people who are not, you know, trans non-binary individuals, people who are not in the outside of the cisgender binary. She said, I'm definitely open to having anyone on my staff or my team, anyone. It doesn't matter, gay, straight, trans, non-binary, you're welcome on my staff. Now, are you a great player? That is how I'm going to choose the talent on my team. Are you a great person for the job? But of course, I'm open to that. That response by her has sat with me all year long. This idea that you have to have this clause, this unnecessary clause of how you're inclusive. And speaking as a cis guy, if people in the queer community and the trans community don't feel like what she's done is enough, then she's not done enough, period. That's all I need to hear. And that's my biggest thing here, is something Eleni touched on, is this: has Digit Murphy demonstrated enough that this isn't what she's about? The answer is resoundingly no. She hasn't done enough. And that's why there is this backlash. And that's why you see so many people who are hurt by this. And I think hurt's an important word here. And I think it's a word that the Boyntons need to really consider what that means, that people are hurt by this decision, especially after the Riveters as an organization made a lot of strides in terms of things like the Black Rosie jersey, things like the mental health jersey they did, like these things that like, oh, this organization looks like it gives a shit. This happens. It doesn't look good. And like Eleni's saying, I don't understand. You have so few people who are passionate and talented, who want to be in this space, don't get paid enough, can make a difference. With the decision, you just pushed at least half a dozen of them, maybe more soon, right? We expect more soon. Maybe more of them out the door because you made this decision. It doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just have to give that the gravity it deserves. Like, it sucks. Nobody's happy about it. And I guess we'll just have to see what happens.
All right. Well, I got a little fired up. But, it's as someone who's been covering the Riveters since day one, year one, I know Dan's been right there with me. It's quite a thing to see people I've seen at the rink for years and years and years. And, people who I know who have met around the rink work so hard, care so much, and they don't feel like this is a place for them anymore. It's crazy. But it's just one more crazy story that we had to cover because so much has happened. But it's the nature of this podcast, right? We cover the big stories, and there's always a lot of big stories, but a lot has happened again. Congrats to the Boston Pride, Isabel Cup champions, and what an unbelievable season of the hockey on the ice it was. I want to make a point to say that, because it was really a great year. I feel like the parity this year was probably the best we've ever seen in the league. Every team had its stars. Every team has like a young franchise player that has fans excited and buzzing. And like, that's awesome that we have this. Like, you feel like players are here and they're going to stay here and they can be part of the core that moves forward and increase salary cap, pay them what they deserve and more. Like that living wage thing we talked about a couple of times. But thanks so much for listening. Do you have any final notes, Eleni, Dan, Michelle?
Nope, just thanks as always for listening in. We really appreciate you guys. We enjoy doing this, but we always like to look and see how many people are listening, and we love any and all of the feedback. We are going to also do a mailbox episode. We got a lot of questions from you guys, but we didn't want to make this a feature film length episode. So we will do a mailbag episode as well. So if you ask us a question, get excited to hear the answer, hopefully. Unless it's a math question, I will not be answering those. If you really want me to answer a math question, I will DM you my hourly rate. So have a lovely rest of your day, evening, and thanks for listening in.